This episode is brought to you by Glorify, the number one Christian daily devotional app. Everything around us changes. God doesn't. That's why I love Glorify's 21-day challenge. It helps me build a simple habit of meeting with God every day. No pressure, just consistency. With Glorify, you can start your morning by reading the Bible passage of the day, diving into Glorify's daily devotional, and wrapping up with an immersive experience called Daily Walk with God. And if you need to take a few minutes to yourself in the middle of a busy day, try one of Glorify's guided meditations or listen to their curated worship playlists for some quiet reflection. To end the day, enjoy Glorify's sleep meditations to help you wind down and put your mind and heart at ease. Whether you're a committed Christian or simply curious about faith, Glorify has something for you. Join over 20 million people who have downloaded the Glorify app and deepened their relationship with God. Listeners to the show can get full access to Glorify for just $29.99 for the entire year. That's Glorify's lowest price ever when you download the Glorify app now at glorify-app.com/redcircle. Feel closer to God this year with Glorify. Get full access all year for just $29.99 at glorify-app.com/redcircle. That's glorify-app.com/redcircle.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ray. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Today, we're going to be diving into and debunking Josh Howerton's dispensationalism. Now, Josh Howerton, if you are unfamiliar with him, is a megachurch pastor. He is a rising star in the world of megachurch Christianity. And unsurprisingly, he is apparently a staunch dispensationalist. Now, the thing you have to know about Josh Howerton is that he is a stick-his-fingers-in-the-air and see-which-way-the-wind-blowing type of guy. This is someone who was extremely woke back in 2020. He was a woke preacher. And then he saw that the direction was changing and shifted gears and, some of us remember. But he is nevertheless the fakest based pastor on the internet. Not only, was he woke, but he still is kind of woke because he's still hanging out with J.D. Greer. Like, he was promoting J.D. Greer's book on, public witness and stuff like that. So Josh Howerton is still a woke preacher. And just because he's woke for black people does not mean he cannot also be woke for Jews. Glenn Beck is a perfect example that you can do both. And so is the case with Josh Howerton. So we're going to dive into his unique perspective where he gives a hybrid interpretation of Genesis 12:3, and also his view on Judaism as a modern religion is entirely heretical. So we'll dive into that, but first I want to let you know Evangelical Dark Web is a Christian news gathering and commentary ministry. You can support our work over at evangelicaldarkweb.org/join. That's our Patreon-like system. Least you can do is like this video, subscribe to the channel or the podcast. If you are new, we also have a free newsletter that gives you Christian news in your inbox each and every day. And we're going to be expanding operations at Evangelical Dark Web in the next month or two. So definitely support. So this is his video. Comes from the last day. It's got over 100,000 views. So it's got six figures of views from Lake Pont Church, which this mega church has 853,000 subscribers. And it's, is Israel actually God's chosen people or just Christians? So here we go. This is at 1.5 speed. We got three clips. They do make reference to a Romans 11 clip, which is what they promoted, but they do make reference to that moving forward. But I want to talk about the dispensationalist view because I think it's fascinating that this is someone who is a young pastor, he's not a boomer is what I'm saying. I don't even think he's an Xer, but he is someone who is, goes in the direction of the wind blows. But he's siding with dispensationalism. Now, this could be a miscalculation. He's had those before. He thought that the culture would be extremely woke in 2020, and it was. But you know who was the lone bulwark defending, standing up against wokeness? Evangelicalism. It was, critical race theories being fought in the church before it became a political phenomenon. President Trump at the time was retweeting Tom Askell to oppose critical race theory. So, this fight was being won by evangelicals before, or at least won, but we were pushing wokeness back, and then the broader culture caught on to pushing wokeness back. It's still there, but it's not as high as it used to be. So anyway, this is the first clip that I want to share, because they kind of do the whole thing of Romans 11, futurism, therefore dispensationalism. So here we go.
youth, how would you, do you think, so Lindsey Graham is harkening back to the Genesis 12 promise, essentially those who bless you, I will bless.
Yeah.
And then what people do is they'll translate it to, hey, so those who bless Israel, I will bless. Is that promise still in effect toward the people of Israel in any way? What do we think? I got thoughts. You got thoughts?
I would love for you to go
first. You may go first. Yeah, here's how I would say it. I'm going to read. So Romans 11, five times, uses the phrase grafted in. This is really important. So Paul already read the passage where he says, hey, the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. The argumentative flow of Romans is that none of the promises will ever fail. That's like the whole thing. None of the promises will ever fail, and none of the promises are revocable. So you'll see some hard supersessionists that'll do this thing like, hey, man, in AD 70, what happened is God divorced Israel. He was married to Israel, but then he divorced Israel. And then they'll go to Romans 11 and they'll go, they'll read passages that say things like, man, some of the branches have been broken off. And they go, see, God broke off the people of Israel. And da, da, da. What I would say is, no, five times it uses the word that we Christians, we're grafted into the promises that were given to them. So what I would say is that promise, like every promise God gives, is still in effect. I would say that it refers to both ethnic Jewish people and Christians who have been grafted into their promises. So I would say that in general, yes, that there is blessing that Christians should expect to accompany, blessing ethnic descendants of Abraham. And people get into a million questions about the Ashkenazi Jews. And I'm just like, hey, man, here's all I know.
So let's pause right there. So this is Josh Howerton arguing that, you know, Genesis 12:3 applies to both Jews and Christians because grafted on. So what he mentioned in passing was that branches are broken off. You know, the branches that are broken off, you know, wither and die without the root. You know, Jesus is the vine. Like, going back to that analogy of Jesus being the vine, the branches that are broken off wither and die because they are without the root. So, or, you know, they likewise become like wild branches on their own. Like, you know, there's different ways that you can take this analogy. But the wild branches that are grafted on, eventually, this is how grafting works, become indistinguishable from natural branches. So what he's trying to do is say that a promise to God, you know, a salvific promise, the tree analogy is salvific, applies to currently unbelieving Jews as they are still natural branches. No, they are actually, unbelieving Jews are broken off branches. They have to come the same way everyone else does. And that's that. So they are arguing that, you know, Christians have to bless modern Israel. That's ultimately what's being argued here, but I'll let them finish.
Greatest concentration of descendants of Abraham in the world.
Yes.
They live in Israel. Yes. 45, I think it's 45%.
It's like around 45% of the world's Jewish people live there.
And, yeah. So we are not, everybody wants simple answers to complex things. We're not saying, oh, you always have to back any decision that the government of Israel takes. That's literally no one is saying that. We are saying we should seek to bless them. Yeah. No, agree, disagree, additional comments.
I'm very much, it's exactly what I say, is that on the one hand, again, I'm very always just careful to say, I don't believe that it's the exact same Israel, but that's point in terms of how I best fulfill that commandment today, is what you said. Hey, 45% of the Jews in the world are in the modern state of Israel. Modern state of Israel, I think, is 75% Jewish. So while I would not equate the two, to me, if I'm going to be generally for them and generally for like them just as a people, then it seems like I should broadly, that's the key word I keep using, is broadly support them and support them in general. But like I said, and be willing to call them out when they're not living up to God's calling on them. And so I think what Lindsey Graham is getting is just the idea of like, hey, if in terms of pulling the plug on America, I really, if you ask Lindsey, what do you mean by this? Like, hey, God has blessed us as a nation. We should not think that that's going to continue if all of a sudden we oppose them. I think that's probably what Lindsey would say. So, okay. Carlos, what are you going to say?
No, you're good. That makes a lot of sense. In these movements as well, in Psalm 122, there's...
So that guy claims to be amillennial, by the way, and it doesn't show because he ultimately does agree with Josh Howerton and his views. So we're going to skip ahead a little bit where they talk about Isaiah 66:8. But I do want to mention, you know, again, one of the problems with the futurist vision of Romans 11 and that it being future of a distinct Jewish people is that there, you know, genetically that doesn't really exist anymore. So I think that is a major problem with that interpretation. So anyway... And they don't dive into that. And there's a lot of nuance that they do not and are not willing to dive into just because I don't think Josh Howerton's all that intelligent. I don't. Like, there's a lot of megachurch pastors. I'm like, okay, this person can be intelligent when they put their mind to it, but Josh Howerton does not strike me as that guy.
66:8, that especially people from a dispensational premillennial view of eschatology, that's a lot of theological words. that they view Isaiah 66:8 and...
Josh Howerton does a lot to distance himself from those terms, or at least there. Like, if that's what you believe, you know, you know, just say it, but he does distance himself from that term, I guess, the train of theological big words, which might scare normies or, you know, the chuds that he kind of reaches. But anyway, you know, mega churches don't like to, you know, they want to be inch deep, mile wide.
More people than them do.
Basically, people that like the Left Behind movie series.
There you go. Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
There you go.
Good job. They view the following verse as a prophecy that was made that was fulfilled in 1948. Here's the verse. Who has ever heard of such things? Who has ever seen things like this? Can a country be born in a day or a nation be brought forth in a moment? Yet no sooner is Zion in labor than she gives birth to her children. Now, the reason that people ask this about 1948 is that after World War II ended, I don't have time to go into all the geopolitics of it, but here's the succinct. After World War II, in 1948, I think it's called the Balfour Declaration, if I remember right. Will you look that up? Balfour Declaration? B-A-L-F-O-U-R. Balfour Declaration. Well, I think it is. It was in 1948, literally in a day.
Mm-hmm. Declaration of Independence, basically.
Boom. In a day.
Yeah.
After not existing for, I don't know, thousands of years.
Yeah.
Israel was reestablished as a nation state in a day. And then, I'm going to tack on to this. And then in 1967, I think it was the Six-Day War, Jerusalem came back under.
So one of the things that I said about him being unintelligent was the fact that the Balfour Declaration was in 1917. It is not the same as the Israeli Declaration of Independence. And if Israel being born in a day is their Independence Day, which, by the way, was a set date in the future, it wasn't like they got together one day and said, we are a nation now. No, it was like the British Mandate ends and then you're independent. Like, that's how it worked. So therefore, like, they were not born in a day. They literally had, I don't know, 5-6 months of labor from the UN resolution to their independence. And the war was ongoing during that time. So, yeah, Israel being born in a day, no. They were not really born in a day, or at least not in a way that's unique or distinct from majority of the other nations on this earth, which have independence days, including the United States of America. And I wouldn't even say that America was born in a day, because it was a process. So this is it is ridiculous to use Isaiah 66:8 to say modern Israel, because it just was not really born in a day. It was an astroturfed movement from the top down by elites over decades that led to the Balfour Declaration, which came at a time when the British entered World War I under false pretense. That's a discussion for, you know, another channel, I guess. But the British go into World War I under false pretense, and they indebt themselves. So the Balfour Declaration is a little bit of a result of that, because, you know, a Jewish lord had some pull there. He had some leverage, and he used it for the Balfour Declaration, and then, you know, a lot of the rest is history. But no, this was not a nation that was born in a day. This was a nation that was born from a political movement that was decades running strong in the United Kingdom, even more so than it was in the United States. We have to remember, dispensationalism is a foreign theology. It's not an American theology.
Under the control of the Jewish people, of the Israeli government. So a lot of people look at that and go, man, that was the exact specific fulfillment of Isaiah 66:8. So back to, was it Balfour Declaration?
That's correct.
Oh, man.
Good job.
It's nice when I get one right.
Look at you.
Did he get the spelling right, too?
He did.
Oh! Again, they fact check him, but they don't actually fact check him. Like, they confirm him in his ignorance.
Oh, so go back to your question.
So the question is that thing that happened in 1948, the founding of Israel, prophetically significant? Basically, does the Bible, did the Bible predict
what do you mean by that?
Paul disagrees with me.
It's hard for me not to go, yes, I don't know, dude, it's
Paul,
hard.
1900 years of Israel not existing, just like that, in the 1900s, it's a nation.
What's wrong with you, Nick Fuentes?
Wow.
I'm going to start calling you Nick.
No, please don't.
That's a joke.
So again, you know, if you don't agree with Israel having not existed and now they exist, you know, Nick Fuentes joke getting cracked at your expense. I feel for bro there, but, you know, he's the most dispensational all-millennial I've heard since apparently John Harris last week, which hurts. But anyway, that one at least hurts. He's more dispensational. He sounds more dispensational than John did. But again, both argue that Genesis 12:3 applies to unbelieving Jews. Actually, John Harris did in more uncertain terms than he does, because he kind of says, oh, they're not really the same Israel. He kind of plays it like that, but he says, but we should support Israel so that God will bless America. And I just think that that's a bad argument. It does not hold up under scrutiny, because when you ask what are the blessings, they don't show. Where are the blessings? I want to see some of these blessings. Well, America has been blessing Israel and defending Israel and stuff like that. And, you know, by blessing, I mean pouring money on. It's like there's no blessings from that. This foreign policy has not resulted in domestic gains. If anything, our nation's in maybe not terminal, but we're in a serious decline. We are in the crisis of the 21st century, as you know, and I don't think that blessing Israel financially and stuff is not related, because Israel currently is such a distraction in politics that we cannot focus on our domestic concerns because of this foreign nation. And that's how that nation wants it. But nevertheless, that's been bad for us. It's been bad for us that one nation has so much pull in our politics that we can't focus on our domestic issues.
This episode is brought to you by Glorify, the number one Christian daily devotional app. Everything around us changes. God doesn't. That's why I love Glorify's 21-day challenge. It helps me build a simple habit of meeting with God every day. No pressure, just consistency. With Glorify, you can start your morning by reading the Bible passage of the day, diving into Glorify's daily devotional, and wrapping up with an immersive experience called Daily Walk with God. And if you need to take a few minutes to yourself in the middle of a busy day, try one of Glorify's guided meditations or listen to their curated worship playlists for some quiet reflection. To end the day, enjoy Glorify's sleep meditations to help you wind down and put your mind and heart at ease. Whether you're a committed Christian or simply curious about faith, Glorify has something for you. Join over 20 million people who have downloaded the Glorify app and deepened their relationship with God. Listeners to the show can get full access to Glorify for just $29.99 for the entire year. That's Glorify's lowest price ever when you download the Glorify app now at glorify-app.com/redcircle. Feel closer to God this year with Glorify. Get full access all year for just $29.99 at glorify-app.com/redcircle. That's glorify-app.com/redcircle.
Here we go with the third clip, which is about Judaism as a false religion, but is it? But, like, I would say yes, unapologetically, but Josh Howerton does not. And this is where, again, we get into some textbook heresy.
Yeah. So just know that in a sense, we come at from different angles, but we land in a lot of the same spot.
Okay, we're going to come more here. I'm going to be coming in just a minute. Does the church replace Israel?
I don't like the way that's worded. No. That's hard supersessionism is what that's called, replacement theology. That, oh, now Israel doesn't matter anymore at all. There are no, in no sense does God have an affection for the Jewish people. The church completely replaced that. The problem with that is it's Romans 11. Again, yeah. It's Romans 9 through 11. You have specific promises about the ethnic descendants of Abraham. And again, the whole argument of Romans is God's promises don't fail.
No. Mm.
And so I would say no, does not completely replace.
It doesn't replace, it expands. It expands.
Yeah. It's like grafted in, it says grafted in, not canceled, exactly. Or removed, or replaced.
Let me read Ephesians 2. This will be a few verses, but stick with me. It's really important. Therefore, remember that at one time you Gentiles, so this is Apostle Paul talking to Gentiles in the flesh, in other words, by ethnicity. Remember that you were at one time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of what? Israel. And strangers to the covenants of promise, having no faith and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you were once far off, have been brought near by the blood of Christ. Now get this, for he himself is our peace, who has made us both one. Yeah. One. And so I would say church does not replace Israel. It expands it in the sense that now the people of God are not just people who are Jewish in descent and who believe, but also Gentiles.
Who actually believes this?
A lot of people. It's particularly, isn't it a common Catholic view, I believe? I
think, there's been some, yeah. I think
the Catholics believe that the Jews are a quote sign people. I do know that. It's also like, I come from like Reformed theological world, and among hard Reformed hard supersessionism is common.
Yeah.
Mm. It is common. The other thing I would say in response to this, and then we can rapid fire more questions, is I'll give you another one. Acts chapter 1.
Yeah.
All right. There's a lot here to unpack, but Josh Howerton, again, claims to have come from Reformed world. Why is he dispensationalist now? I think, you know, Mr. Krabs might have an answer, and that's money. He wants the fame. Again, megachurch pastor, megachurch mentality. And that whole ecosystem is dispensational for the most part. Especially once you get into the prosperity gospel swimming lanes. Granted, he might have the Passion Conference, which is big for John Piper and stuff like that, who's not dispensational, but still. It was like, who actually believes that? Who actually believes what Christians believe for the first 1800 years? It's like, are they seriously that uninformed on Christian history? I mean, the one guy, at least to his credit, acknowledges that, and they're like, oh, well, Catholics, and then I guess they're looking up live time. Orthodox, Lutherans, they're about to say Lutherans if they haven't already. They're figuring out, and then he's like, well, yeah, I grew up in this, and this is what they believe. So it's a dishonest framing of, like, they think that their position is more majority than it actually is, and I don't even... It is a dwindling majority, if it was ever a majority in evangelicalism, but it's certainly not the majority of Christians globally or historically.
The apostles go, hey, Jesus, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? His response is not, oh, hey, man, hey, dummies, Israel didn't matter anymore. He goes, no, you're going to receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you've been witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. So the answer to that is no.
Yeah, so Eastern Orthodox Church generally...
they ask Jesus if he's going to restore the kingdom, and he directs them to their mission on earth. What is that an indication of? You know, Jesus says his kingdom is not of this world, which is not to say that it's not in this world, but the origins of the kingdom are not of this world. They're not natural. They're supernatural. So they're going into the world. And, you know, it just feeds that. He's not... it's not that Jesus doesn't correct the disciples when they ask this question. It's actually more that he directs them towards what actually matters.
Yes, they believe that. Roman Catholic Church historically have believed that that was the mainstream view, apparently. Lutheran churches historically, yes. Yeah.
Although, just for clarity, they would not say that they would not necessarily use the word replace. That word is frankly often put in their mouths by people that are more premillennial dispensationalists.
Last question.
All right. Judaism is a false...
So, again, the fact that they're trying to live check they're trying to fact check their own statements live because they're not informed on basic theological differences between different camps. It's a bad look.
It's religion. It has nothing to do with Christianity.
It depends which kind.
By the way, that's what people say. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, that's right. You're asking. It depends which kind. There are forms of, like, Talmudic Judaism, and we don't, you know, even I'm not aware enough to answer this intelligently, so I'll speak broadly. There are forms of Talmudic Judaism and things like that are stinking nasty. Mm. Like, they're nasty, nasty, nasty. That I'd be like, yep, out. No. And let me go back to what we said earlier. No. This is why Jesus said the Judaism epoch of history done. So Jewish, again, just want to keep saying this, man. The only way to be saved is faith in Jesus Christ. What I would say to your question is it depends which kind. Okay, mm-hmm. So the nasty demonic forms of, like, Talmudic Judaism, out.
Okay, again, all Judaism is Talmudic. All of it is Talmudic nowadays. They had to reinvent their religion after Jesus destroyed it. This is such a cop-out answer to say only these types of Talmudic Judaism. The modern Jews believe that the Talmud is more authoritative than the Christian Old Testament. That's a fact. It drives their ethics, and it drives their the morality and all that. It is driven by the Talmud. It is not driven by the Old Testament. They do not believe in the Ten Commandments, especially applied to Gentiles or the Goyim.
If you're talking about, like, faithfully practiced Old Testament Orthodox type Judaism, I think the better way to say it is that it's not a false religion, but it's a fulfilled and obsolete one.
Hmm.
What do you think? Is that a good way to say
that? That's exactly how I would say it. I mean, like, literally, I was going to say it's a fulfilled religion.
So I would say it's not saving. No. It is not salvific. So in that sense,
yes,
it is. You know, it's,
I think distinguishing a few things here. One is when we use the word false religion, to me, it carries the idea of this is the completely wrong God and its practices that were never instituted by God. Whereas we would say the Jews worship Yahweh, and we do too. The practices were instituted by God, but to your point, they've been fulfilled. So the reason I say it that way is I would never to equate Judaism with Islam or any of the other world religions. It's different. It's a fulfilled religion. The second thing I think, and this
here's why that's important. You'll see some people be like, hey man, because Judaism is not saving, we should oppose Judaism in the same way that we oppose Islam. What I would say is, hey, both of them are non-salvific. Like, you go over there and yeah, you're going to end up in hell. Yep. I'm going to shoot you straight. Yep, you are. But man, they're not symmetrically evil. It's like there's a radical asymmetry between the worldwide effects of these two things.
Again, this is just such an incorrect statement. Let me just read a verse here. 1 John 2:22. Who is a liar but the one who denies that Jesus is the Christ? This is the Antichrist, the one who denies the Father and the Son. This applies to all modern Jews in their religion. Their religion is anti-Christ. There's not a faithful way to practice it. They do not worship the same God because they reject the Son. It is very clear. You cannot go to the Father except through the Son, except through Christ. Jesus makes it very clear that he is the exclusive mediator to go to the Father. Therefore, Jews cannot go to the Father. And because he's so uninformed on what Jews actually believe and practice, they do not practice a continuation of Mosaic Judaism. Mosaic Judaism was so specific that it had to be practiced at certain locations altogether. There had to be sacrifices. There had to be Levites. There had to be a temple or a tabernacle. You know, it's funny that God created a religion that needed a central location to worship at, and then destroyed that central location to send a message. He sent a message by destroying their religion. So what happened after that? The Talmud, which has its origins during the time of Christ, you can see Jesus combating the oral law. That oral law, that oral tradition that Jesus opposed while on earth, becomes the proto-Talmud. And then they build an entire new religion that is an aberration of Mosaic Judaism. It is not the same religion. They do not have priests, they do not have a temple, and they do not have God either. And I would say they also don't really have the law and stuff like that. Law or the prophets. Because, you know, Isaiah, very much an ignored prophet in modern Judaism because of chapter 53. So it's not the same religion. And once people realize that, they start to question dispensationalism because he's selling you a bill of goods. He's lying to you, but trying to make it seem like he's heard and has addressed criticism of modern Judaism. And then to say it's not equatable to Islam, like, first of all, Christians have a very proud history of doing apologetics against Judaism, the same as they would do against Islam. Look at the patristics and medieval Christianity. They have a proud history of writing back and forth saying, hey, your religion's false, stuff like that. Obviously being overly simplistic in, you know, what their message and their letters were, but there's a long history of Christians opposing Judaism with the same vigor as Islam. The other thing is, Islam and Judaism are the number one and number two persecutors of the Christian church historically. Number one and number two, you can choose the order. I'm just giving you what the top two are. You can perfectly decide that, especially if you want to, remember that, you know, communism is kind of Jewish. But anyway, it's an excuse to kill Christians. That's really what communism kind of is. But number one and number two persecutors of the church. They have often worked together to persecute the church. And, you know, modern Israel is a bit of a, what's the way to put it? Abnormality in the relationship between Islam and Judaism. So, I have a little bit, I got like a half minute more of this.
Thanks.
100%. Yep. Biblical Judaism is the root from which Christianity grew. Islam came 600 years later, basically denying the core elements of Christianity. Denies the crucifixion, the resurrection, the divinity of Jesus, the Trinity, the need for atonement through Jesus' death and reliability of the New Testament as we have it. Very different.
And by the way, there were early Jewish Christians, Romans, who they were not practicing the sacrifices or anything like that, but they were actually still practicing parts of the Old Testament law. They just didn't believe they say. They just were practicing their faith in Jesus. Mm-hmm. So we got to be really careful. The only thing I'd say here in this conversation, because it's another example of how we conflate different things. I'll do this fast. We do in these conversations have to be careful not to conflate all Jews with the practice of Judaism. Of the 75% of the Israeli population that is Jewish, half are secular.
Yeah, they're mostly atheists.
20 to 25% are very active, but another 20, 25% are mainly only nominal. Maybe like their version of Christ or Easter, Christ or Christians kind of a thing. Christmas, Easter, only Christians. And so I think we do need to be careful to not conflate those two things. That's the only other thing I would add in there.
Last thing I'd say on this is we're going to link to it.
All right. I apologize. I had to switch my mic real quick because it just decided to die. So anyway, Judaism is united in one thing. That Christ is not God. That is the thing that binds secular Jews and religious Jews. That is the thing that combines all of them. So anyway, that's all I got to say about that. I think hopefully I've been very clear, but again, it's very interesting that a megachurch pastor that goes where the wind blows is endorsing dispensationalism, because I think that's a sense that, yeah, people see that this is where the money and support is. At least in the short term. And maybe Josh Howerton is planning his pivot later in like 10 years or whatever, when, you know, the boomer generation is no longer the dominant force in the church and politics. But you know, there's a time coming where, you know, Israel's days of broad support in the United States are numbered. So anyway, that's all I got to say about that. My name is Ray, it's the Evangelical Dark Web. Have a blessed day. Stay based. Christ is King, and we will catch you on the next one.